Hello, my name's Patrick, and I'm a Scream Queen. I'm a Scream Queen, and so are you!
Hello again, my beautiful screamers, and welcome to another episode of Scream Queens, the podcast where horror gets bent. This is episode 151, and tonight we are going to be looking at the movie that made incest a part of your 7th grade summer reading curriculum for some fucked up reason. We're looking at the movie that made cookies a deadly weapon. That's right, we're going to be looking at the 1987 schlockfest, Flowers in the Attic, by request of my very special guest, listener Ben Schur. And we're joined by super cool game designer Brian Wilson, who's got a very special prize for one of you. What might that prize be? Well, I'll give you a hint in this little trailer for his other thing that's not a thing yet, but it will be soon with your help. And I'm babbling already. I'm not a minute in, and I'm already babbling. Somebody make me a cocktail. Stat.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Brian. We have a company called Galactic Sneeze.
You might know us from games like Schmovie, the hilarious game of made-up movies.
And now we're making a new game, and it's full of hilarious adult content. It's called Spank the Yeti, the party game of questionable decisions.
Ding! You just flip over 3 action cards, like Tongue Bathe, Milk, and Finger Bang, and 3 object cards, like a jar of expired mayonnaise, a coked out unicorn, and Jeff Goldblum. Let's say it's Victor's turn.
Yay!
Spank the Yeti works a lot like the classic parlor game, F*** Marry Kill. Victor must decide which of these he would tongue bathe, which he would milk, and which he would finger bang. The other players predict how they think Victor will answer. Players lock in their answers by placing their corresponding ABC cards face down in front of them. Then, each player takes a turn explaining why they made the predictions they did.
I know what Victor would do. I think Victor would tongue bathe Jeff Goldblum, because I bet he's delicious. He'd probably milk the coked out unicorn to get all that sweet unicorn juice, and he would finger bang that warm jar of expired mayo.
Okay, I think Victor would tongue bathe the coked out unicorn and milk Jeff Goldblum. Do you know how much Jeff Goldblum milk would go for on eBay? And clearly, you finger bang any mayo you get your hands on, expired or not. Now it's Victor's turn to reveal his answers.
Okay, guys, let me tell you what's up. I would definitely tongue bathe Jeff Goldblum, because I bet he would appreciate my particular attention to detail. I would milk the coked out unicorn because of the sparkles and the magic and the rainbows. And I would finger bang that naughty jar of expired mayonnaise.
Players score points for each pairing they predicted correctly. So Brian gets 3 points, Sarah gets 1 point, and Victor gets the same number as whomever scored the most. 3.
That's 15 points. I win.
Whatever.
Yeah, f*** you, Brian.
We are super excited about Spank the Yeti, and we can't wait to get it out there. If it seems like a game that you'd enjoy playing, please back our Kickstarter.
And it'd be awesome if you could please share our video with just one friend you think would dig Spank the Yeti, too.
Thank you.
Ta-da! I got next.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's great to have everybody here again. Yay! Now, for those of you who are new, my name is Patrick. I'm going to be your host for the next 90 minutes or so, and I will be your guide to the weird and wonderful and sometimes really awful world of horror, but as seen through my gay little eyes. Now, some of you are probably wondering, holy shit, Patrick, you got this episode out really quickly after the last one. Yeah, I did, because I'm really awesome that way, but also because my special guest Brian Wilson needs your help. And it's on a time crunch because his new game, Spank the Yeti, is on Kickstarter, and he's going to need your help to get this awesome game going. And as soon as I saw him play it, I said, I think my listeners can really shine through. Get yourself a copy. Give him some money. Go over to Kickstarter at his Kickstarter thing at SpankTheYeti.com. And if you're wondering why, you'll find out soon because we're going to be playing around when he joins us to talk about the movie. And we're going to be giving away a copy of his other game, Schmovie. the game of made-up movies. That's right. One of you is going to win that. You can't win Spank the Yeti yet because it's not out. So just simmer down. I know. But hey. What's been going on in Scream Queen's headquarters since last we met? Honestly, not a hell of a lot. Things have been quiet. And that's okay. I don't mind that. I did want to say, though, something I forgot on the last episode, which is fine because it was running long anyway. I got to hang out with listener Vanessa for a night, and that was really great. We went to go see Gas Station Horror at the People's Improv Theater. Now, this is a group, they perform every month or so, and they take scenes from DVDs that they find, you know, the really awful DVDs that you find at a gas station or at the bodega, things for like 99 cents, you know, with cardboard cover. Did I have that cocktail from earlier? No, I didn't. So I have no excuse for not being able to form that word. Well, anyway, they do that and they do a scene based on that and they do very, very funny, funny work. Although, I have to say, Vanessa and I went for their Friday the 13th show, since it was Friday the 13th and all. And they didn't do anything from any of the Friday the 13th, so I was a bit disappointed. But not that show, but the one previous that I went to, they made fun of Tourist Trap. And host JW, he was like, we're giving away a copy to someone, whoever, of Tourist Trap, to whoever wants this piece of crap, because it's terrible. And I was just looking at him like, I have to kill you someday. Not today, because I want to see the show, but I'm going to kill you for that. And then they showed the cracker scene. The scene they had to base their scene off of was the cracker scene, which is my favorite goddamn scene in the movie. JW, you got no taste, but you know what? You're funny. And you're cute. So I'll let it slide. So that happens. That was very exciting. Now, a couple of you have pointed out to me, hey, Patrick, it's podcast award season. What's going on? Are you nominated? No, I'm not. I did not submit myself this year. I did not ask anybody to campaign this year because I had a bug in my bonnet after what happened at the awards last year. If you don't remember, when they announced the LGBT podcast awards, they started making jokes about how they were all about flower arranging and it went on forever and it was embarrassing and it got me mad. And then when they announced the awards this year, they said there was going to be a fee to register yourself. And I was pissed. Those two things together made me unhappy. However, Joey Buhucker, hi Joey, who is nominated. Yay, Joey, Cocktails and Cream Puffs is nominated to go vote for them right now. But, well, not right now. Listen to the show first, then go vote for them. Anyway, he told me that it's under new management based on what happened last year and that the fee is to keep the really corporate shows that always win from winning all the time. And I didn't know that at the time, but that's okay. I take a year off from it. That's cool. That's cool. Because I need some time to reconnoiter my own life. And the last thing I need is to be whoring myself out on the internet any more than I already am. Did that come out right? Yeah, I guess it kind of did. I whore myself out on the internet in many, many ways. And yes, so there's awkward. Aside from that, there's really not been that much interesting going on. I'm still working on getting the apartment into something workable. I cleaned out the storage unit because it was mostly Brad's stuff and the stuff I found down there that he left. I was like, whoa, crazy stuff that I'm really not at liberty to talk about because I was like, I don't know what you're doing with this, honey, but wow, I'm glad it stayed down here. Wasn't it? And again, if you are a listener in the Denver, Colorado area, please let me know. I'm going to be there for the first week in July, and it would be great to meet up for a drink and hang out for a little bit. So, yeah, do that. Get on that. I'll be there singing with the Gay Men's Chorus at the Gala Festival, which is like the Olympics of choruses from all around the world, and it'll be fabulous. But, you know, I'm sure I'm going to need a break from all that kumbaya at some point. And it's always great to meet a screamer. Damn Skippy. Ooh, I almost forgot this completely. Last week, I went to see one of Hedda Lettuce's world-famous drag queen, Hedda Lettuce's Thursday night movie classics at the Chelsea Bowtie Cinemas. Now, I've mentioned this before. She screens a classic movie from all different kinds of genres. She adds a commentary, and it's tons and tons and tons of fun. So I went with some of my friends from the New York City Gay Men's Chorus, and we saw Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte. Charlotte, don't you cry. And it's so fun to see these movies with a majority, with an audience that is predominantly gay. They just love the whole cinema of it. They love the camp of it, respond appropriately, and you see things that you never noticed before. What did you notice this time? Well, this time it's just It had nothing to do with the audience. It just had something to do with me being really smart. In the middle of a movie, a Coke truck goes zooming across the screen for no reason. A Coca-Cola truck. Not a truck with cocaine in it, because that would be amazing. But no, that's not what happened. But I remember, I'm like, ooh, I did some research and I was right. Because I remembered that this is supposed to be the big reuniting of Joan Crawford and Bette Davis after whatever happened to Baby Jane, right? Right. But no, she started filming, Joan Crawford did. Uh-huh. And then she's like, I don't feel well. Meh. And she faked getting sick to get out of her contract. Now, the poor director, nobody would take the role that she had. Nobody wanted to play this villainess. And he went through hell to finally get Olivia de Havilland to say yes, even though it was completely against her type, and she did not want to do the movie. The movie almost did not happen because Joan Crawford decided she didn't want to, she didn't like Bette Davis picking on her. And as many of you know, Joan Crawford at this time was married to the president of Pepsi Cola, so all of her movies had ridiculously prominent placements of Pepsi products. What came to mind was one I talked about here on the show when I reviewed Straight Jacket. It's a scene where she and her daughter are having an argument in the kitchen. Except in the frame is like 75% of it is this gigantic plate crate of Pepsi that just sits on the kitchen table. Joan is all the way screen left. Her daughter's all the way screen right. And for a good 3 minutes, it's just Pepsi in the middle of the screen. And so with that Coke truck drove through, I said, I bet Joan Crawford just shit her pants just a little bit. Yeah, they had Coke machines installed in people's dressing rooms after she quit just to say a fuck you to her. And it's tons of fun. It's not a great movie. It's nowhere near as fun as What I Have to Baby Jane, but it's got some lovely camp moments. You vile lying bitch, because it's all dripping with fake southernness, and I enjoyed it. It's good time. Chelsea Classics with Head of Lettuce. If you're in New York on a Thursday night, you should go. It's only like $10. What a bargain. I really don't have anything else to say, so rather than, I'm going to say one more thing. I saw a movie last night. I saw the new Belgian movie called Cub, or Velp, W-E-L-P, depending. And it's the story of a Cub Scout trip that goes very, very, very wrong when they run into a feral boy with a thirst for blood. I'm not sure if I liked it. It's a really dark movie. It's beautifully shot. It's very well acted. It's got an amazing score. His mask is really scary. The kills are really creepy. But there's a cruelty level to it that I'm not sure it earned. And if you are a dog lover, granted the dog always dies in these movies. It's the DAD principle. Dog always dies. It's a horror movie staple. But this dog dies really hard and really unpleasantly. And I almost turned the movie off. I'm not sure it earned that, because there's a couple of avenues that the movie could have taken that they kind of set up and they just ignored. And I was a bit disappointed. It left me with a kind of a funny taste in my mouth, but I'm not sure that makes it a bad movie. So why don't you check out Cub and let me know what you thought on the voicemail line or through emails. The information will be coming at the end of the show, because I don't feel like repeating myself 99,000 times, goddammit, because I got these great guests who are just chomping at the bit to play a game with me. And what was fun? Well, like, we're going to play around of Brian's game, Spank the Yeti, right? But here's the thing. First I played with Ben, then I played with Brian, now I want to play with you! So you're going to be playing along at home, and if you win the game, you'll win the game! You'll win a copy of his other game, Schmovie, and it's going to be great fun. And I think I said that already, but it's really hot in here because I had to turn the air conditioning off. So I'm sweaty and shirtless. So just think about that for a while. You're like, yeah, that's boring. Patrick's being boring. Well, just think about my glistening super white torso sitting here in the living room covered in cat fur from this couch. Yes. Yes, I'm 46. Gay man who lives with a fat cat, sleeps with a CPAP machine, a mismatched dental card. is practically an albino and is covered in cat fur. Love me. Love me, kids. Okay, let's get down to the show because I am losing it. Wow. Wowie. Wow, wow, wow.
Where have all the flowers gone?
They're in the attic.
Long time passing. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time ago.
They're in the attic.
Where have all the flowers gone?
I said they're in the attic.
Young girls pick them, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? Where have all the young girls gone?
She's in the attic.
Long time passing. Where have all the young girls gone?
Yeah, are you not listening to me?
Long time ago. Where have all the young girls gone?
God damn it, Kingston Trio.
Gone to young men, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn?
So if there's anything I learned from Flowers in the Attic, it's really no fun to be, you know, imprisoned in a house all by yourself. So I am very fortunate to have with me the person who forced this movie on me. He's a listener, a longtime listener. It turns out he grew up where I went to college, and I get you, Ben Schur. I get you. So it is my delight to introduce to you the one, the only, my friend that I've never met before, but we're like the same person, but with really different hair, Mr. Ben Schur.
I'll plant my own tree, and I'll make it grow. My tree will not be just one in a row.
I am so excited to be here. I feel like Joan Bennett on Name That Tune.
And you look like Joan Collins in The Fountain after Crystal threw her in there.
Why, thank you. It's true. We have the same hair.
Very, very welcome. But kids, that is not all. I have also with me a man I just met on Friday, a man who is an inventor of a game that got me so excited. I said, I have got to have him. I've got to have him right now on the show, that is. So it is my thrill to introduce to you the geeky, handsome inventor of amazing games, Mr. Brian Wilson. Oh, it's my pleasure, Brian. I'm just disappointed you're not the one from the Beach Boys. Do you get that a lot?
You know, I have to tell you, that is the first time I have heard that today.
Just today.
Okay. Yeah. I find there's an age gap. Anyone who is, I don't want to date you, but I would say anyone that's 35.
You're a married man, Brian Wilson. You cannot date me.
Anyone who's 35 or older, upon hearing my name, that is generally the very first thing they say.
Okay, so I'm good. So good. So I fell into my age grouping.
Perfect.
Can I tell you a story about Brian Wilson?
Please.
It was stupid. A friend of mine loves Brian Wilson for some reason, got tickets to see him at, I can't think of any of the damn concert halls now. Doesn't matter. One of the funky concert halls in New York. He couldn't go. So he's like, please take the ticket. Please take the ticket. I didn't want to go. So I went, and it was the worst thing I've ever seen. He just had no energy. And the best part was, he's like, I'm going to sing one of my favorite songs, and I think you're going to know it. I think you're going to like it. He sat down. He started plunking out with one finger. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. And people started singing along. He's like, no! No, this is my song. How I wonder, I can't, how much did you pay for these tickets? But you're not that Brian Wilson.
That is so disturbing.
That's exactly what I would expect.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, he's not all there anymore. I have not seen him perform lately. But
I didn't see him perform. I don't know what he was doing. Well,
man, oh man. Well, I'm glad you survived.
Yeah, I left shortly after that. I'm like, I can't. I was recording it in my phone, and I was like, I can't. This is just terrible. And everyone's like, yeah, Brian Wilson. I'm like, this, what?
People love him.
Excited?
Sorry, Ben?
People were excited about it?
Oh, yeah, they were cheering and screaming. They're probably all high, too.
I find people who are fans are mega fans.
Yeah.
There are very few people who just casually like him.
Well, There you go. But you know what? Nobody just casually likes you, Brian Wilson. It's a full-time job. It is a whole – it's like all-in type thing. Because, you know, Ben, I met Brian on Friday. I went to go see my friend Mike Gregoric, who used to be my boss at the Jekyll and Hyde Club before it, you know, went under. He does this one-man show, kind of talk show type thing. And Brian was the guest, one of the three guests that he had on. And he was there to demonstrate and talk about his exciting new game. Brian, would you like to tell us about it?
Sure, yeah. So my wife and I have a company called Galactic Sneeze. And we live here in Brooklyn. And we also have – we have a four-year-old intern. And between the three of us, invent new toys and games. And Spank the Yeti is our latest creation. It's been on Kickstarter now for about 2 weeks, and it'll continue through June the 17th. And it is a dirty adult party game. It's based on the popular game mechanic of Fuck, Marry, Kill. I don't know if you guys know Fuck, Marry, Kill.
I know it well.
Very well, yeah.
Ben and I invented that game.
So in our game, there are two decks of cards. There's a deck of action cards and then a deck of object cards. And in the action cards, it's all the stuff you could do to somebody or something. And then the object cards are all the things that you could do something to. It's filled with celebrities and pop culture stars and historical figures and then creatures and just funny stuff that we made up. And you put three action cards out and then three object cards out, and then you pick somebody to be it. And then everyone has to guess how they would match up the actions and the objects. It's super simple sort of dark and twisted and super dirty. There are there's a handful of dirty adult games out there now, and we've tried them all, and then we thought, how can we make an even more fun one? And this is our answer.
Okay. Good answer. Now, Ben, I realize that was a lot to take.
And oh, listeners, I watched the video on Kickstarter.
Oh, okay. Ben, help me out. I'm trying to play along as the listener going, what did he just say? That was a lot of words happening, and I don't know what's happening. I was going on. I figured the easiest way to show people how much fun this game is we're going to play around.
Awesome.
Yeah. And now, Ben, I've already decided you're going to be the Yeti.
Okay, love it.
Explain to him what that means, Brian.
Okay, so I'm gonna flip over three action cards, and then I'm going to flip over three object cards. And then you are going to think about how you would match them up. And then Patrick and I, we're going to first guess how we think you're going to match them up. And then you're going to tell us whether we're right or not. And we're going to get 1 point right, 1 point for everyone we get right. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes perfect sense.
I'll give you some examples. So if I give you three options, and we have Blumpkin, a Blumpkin is?
Right off the bat, we're going right for the Blumpkin. I love you, Brian. You're a ninja.
I actually didn't know that Blumpkin was even a thing, so I'm feeling kind of not in the loop or chic right now.
I pulled these just randomly right off the top of the deck here. I probably should have vetted these ahead of time.
I would explain to you what a Blumpkin is, Brian, but it's Ben, but it's disgusting. Why do you both have bees in your name? It's very confusing.
I would Google it.
I'll Google it.
Yeah, so we have Blumpkin. We have Move Into an Alabama Trailer Park With, and Joust. So those are your three options. And okay. Then you have three objects that you get to choose between. You have A is a Care Bear who just doesn't fucking care. B is a shitty mime. And C is Chewbacca.
Wow, okay.
So between a Care Bear who just doesn't fucking care, a shitty mime, and Chewbacca, we need you to figure out who you would either, I guess, perform or receive a Blumpkin from or to, who you'd move into an Alabama trailer park with, and who you would joust.
Wow. I'm really kind of bummed that Jeff Goldblum doesn't appear anywhere here. He did on the video. And I was like, yes, I wanted to get sexy with Jeff Goldblum. Instead, I get Chewbacca. But okay, I have looked up Plumpkin. I know what it is now. So
I'm sorry. Your life will never be the same again.
Oh, let's see. You know, I've seen it. I've seen and done most things. So I think I'm going to say.
Right. I'm so bad.
Yes. Okay. I'm bad at games. Okay.
Well, you're thinking about it. Brian, I have to tell you, since this game has been introduced to me.
Yes, sir.
The name Spank the Yeti has fascinated me, and I keep putting it into songs where it doesn't belong.
I'm so excited.
Spank the Yeti on the left-hand side. I say spank the Yeti on the left-hand side. So it's ridiculous. Or spank the Yeti tonight. Spank the Yeti. So, yes. So that's what you've done to me.
I love it.
I'm obsessed.
That's fantastic. You know, this game could be named anything. I think a big part of game design is trying to come up with a fun name. Mm-hmm. And we could have called this, you know, the crazy mixy match game. And then once we got the idea that we should name it after some cards, and in this game here, you know, we have Spank as an option that you could come up with, and then there's a Yeti in here you could pull out as an object card. So then we tried to find the best pairing between the two, and Spank the Yeti had an awesome ring to it. It just sounded kind of fun and a little bit dirty.
And dangerous.
And dangerous. Yeah, it's aggressive. And you could still put it on the front of a box. And
yes,
say
that is very important. You can sell it in Walmart. Not that you would want to, but you know what I mean. Yes, you would want to, but you know they don't deserve you.
They have yet to call.
Fuck them. Okay, you ready, Ben?
I'm ready. Yes.
Okay.
I should have been paying more attention here. Let me get my. Are you going to go first, Patrick?
I will go first.
Okay, that gives me a second to pull these together.
Okay, I think that Ben would joust that shitty mime, because if he's that shitty, he deserves to be hit at high velocity with a wooden stick just to see if he says something. He probably would, because he's a shitty mime. Ow, no, Ben, stop. See, shitty mime. You're in a box. The box is getting smaller. No talking mimes. I think that you would. I'm very torn here. I think that perhaps you would want to move into an Alabama trailer park with Chewbacca, because I think he'd be very popular, and I think he would be a cool person to live with, and he would make you popular, even more popular than you already are. Everyone would be like, oh my God, I want to see Chewbacca, and you're like, no, sorry, you know, he doesn't want to hang out with you. And that leaves you giving a Blumpkin to a Care Bear, who just doesn't care anymore because he doesn't care. That's right, Care. That's right, Smiley. Suck my dick while I take a shit. That's right. Are you crying? Are you crying? No, you're not crying because you don't care.
You know, I think those are all very logical answers, but I think you've got it completely wrong. Completely wrong. I think Ben is going to give a Blumpkin to a shitty mime.
Okay.
I think because no matter how it's going, he's not going to talk about it.
That is.
And if it is going well, he'll be able to properly express his excitement at your performance.
Mm. And if it goes really, really badly, he's already shitty.
You're right. There's already shit involved.
That's
we're
right.
Halfway there already.
You are winning.
All right. So I think you're going to move into an Alabama trailer park with a Care Bear who just doesn't fucking care. You may not know this, but I'm actually from Alabama.
Oh.
And I have spent some time in trailer parks.
Mm.
And, you know, there are some lovely trailers out there. And then there are some really horrible, shitty trailers out there. And I think a Care Bear who just doesn't fucking care isn't going to mind being in a horrible Alabama trailer park.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, it's not going to bother him. He's not going to be a downer. He's not going to be trying to bring you down.
That's true. You can decorate it any way you like. You can turn it into a meth lab. You can burn it down. He won't care.
He's not going to bitch about it. And the last thing you want to do is have someone there complaining the whole time about how horrible the trailer park is.
It's true.
I think jousting Chewbacca will just be completely fucking epic.
that would be
better. I think of all three options here, the one that you're going to be able to, you know, add to your novel about your life, the one that they're going to put in the movie about your life is you jousting Chewbacca.
All right. So am I supposed to say now what I decided?
Yes, and explain. Yeah. And that's part of the game. Okay. The fun of the game is explaining your answers.
Of course. I would say that Brian actually is completely right. Sorry, Patrick, you're my old dear friend, and I worship you, but you just don't understand me at all. You don't. I thought you got me, and apparently you don't. So
it's your voice that's throwing me off. I'm used to you just being letters on a screen.
It's true. So I would give a Blumpkin to a shitty mime because I was like, well, at least it's human, right?
And wow. Are those your standards, Ben?
look what I'm dealing with here. Look at what my choices are.
Well, I'll take you home. At least you're human. Okay.
I would move into, shitty mime can be cute, you know? Like, you know, just because they're a shitty mime doesn't mean that they're
How
not.
How can you tell them to white face?
I know. Well, white face is not a turn on for me at all, but this is the decision I made. Don't judge my choices.
Okay, I can't argue. I can't argue.
I would move into an Alabama trailer park with a Care Bear who doesn't care. And I really debated whether I wanted to move in with Chewbacca or the Care Bear, because you're right. I think Chewbacca would make a low maintenance, easy roommate. And he has charisma, but I'm very verbal. And I think that I really need somebody who I can speak with. And I assume that the Care Bear would talk like they did on the cartoon. And I like people who have no fucks left to give. So I assume that I would also feel that way about a Care Bear. I could just imagine us sitting and drinking beer, watching TV, and just bitching for hours, and that's probably all I would need. You know, I would hate – I love Chewbacca, so I would hate to fight him, but after the other life choices I made, jousting with him was the one that just – it just made the most sense. And I agree. I enjoy the epicness of it, but I am aware that Chewbacca would kick my ass in a minute, so it would be over really fast. But, you know, like the Care Bear who doesn't care, I'd probably want it to be over really fast because I'm not very athletic.
Well, I don't know how well Chewbacca can ride a horse either.
Mm. Yes.
True.
So the way the game works is I would then get 1 point for everyone I got right. Which
is all of them, Gloater.
All of them. And Ben gets the same points as whoever gets the most. So Ben also gets 3 points.
Okay.
So you are, as my mom would say, you are sucking hind tit right now, Patrick.
Sucking what?
Sucking hind tit. I believe it's a
an Alabama thing, clearly. No, I get it. I get it. I'm getting it with this, with teats and suckling, and yeah, you get the one that's near the butt.
I think it's a cat joke. Yeah. Or a dog.
It's an animal with many tits joke. I'm sucking the tit near the butt, which is the story of my life. So now I talked to Brian earlier, and we have come up with a rather exciting proposition for you listeners. We are going to play kind of a round. Ben is going to pull another set of cards, which I am going to determine my answers for. And if you write or call in with your answers, and they match mine, and I love the story, the best story that matches my answers will win a copy, not of Spank the Yeti, because it's not out yet, but Ben's other game, Schmovie, which is also awesome. Brian's game. Brian, could you please tell them about Schmovie?
Sure, yeah. So Schmovie is the hilarious game of made-up movies. It's been out for about 3 years now, and it's super simple to play. And unlike Spank the Yeti, Schmovie is 8+, so it's a family game that you can play with everybody.
Oh, forget it. No, forget it. Offer's off. No, forget
it. Hang on. Wait, there's a twist.
Okay.
So in Schmovie, one person is the judge, or we call them the Schmovie producer, and they roll a genre die, and the genre die lets you know what kind of movie it's going to be. You know, it could be a horror or sci-fi or drama or action or romantic comedy, and one side has a question mark on it. And if you roll the question mark, you get to pick whatever genre you want, and it's frequently porn. Depending on who you're playing with. So we found a way to work porn into a game that's still great for kids and grandma.
Sure. That's nice. That was clever of you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You left a back door open.
But I'm pumped.
See what I did there? Yes. Okay.
So once you have a genre, you flip over two cards, and they tell you what your shmovie is about. So it could be a drama about a constipated princess, or an action movie about a killer sandwich, anything. And then everyone writes down a title for what they would want to call, say, an action movie about a killer sandwich. And it could be based on a real movie, like Last Action Gyro.
Nice.
Sleepy Hollow, or Teenage Mutant Ninja Tortoise, I guess. Or completely made up, like Loaded Bun, or...
Now we're back to porn.
Now we're back to porn again. So anyway, the game's super simple. You come up with funny titles for made-up movies, and it's a blast. And we would love to have your listeners win some games.
That sounds super fun and exciting. Okay, I'm ready. And after we're done recording, I'm going to let you guys know. Well, we'll finish this round when they're not around. Do you understand what I'm saying? Forget it. You don't need to know what I'm saying. I'm a goddamn host. Just say yes.
Yes.
Okay. So, Brian, please pull my cards.
Okay. So, and if you love these, awesome. If you don't love these, we can pull new cards.
If it doesn't matter, I am going to work with the cards I am dealt.
Okay. So we have feed pudding two.
Feet put into.
Feed pudding two.
Wait, what?
feed pudding to. You're going to give someone pudding.
Oh, feed pudding to. Okay.
Maybe with a spoon or a...
Okay, okay, uh-huh.
You make a skin suit out of...
Skin suit, sure.
And treat to a golden shower.
Okay.
We have... So for your objects, we have the Knight Susei Ni.
Uh-huh.
A dancing Gordon, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Beetlejuice.
Okay, you two talk amongst yourselves for a second while I figure out my answers.
I know the. I feel like I know the answers to all of those.
You know the answer to everything.
Is for myself, I mean. I don't know about you.
Okay. Okay.
Have you heard Patrick talking about pudding one way or the other, Ben?
No.
Yes, he has. Yes, he has. I watched the show called Midsummer Murders, BBC series, uh-huh. And you know it's a stuffy British mystery thing. And there was one at an exclusive boys' academy, you know, ancient school, and there was an ancient club there. That was – it started off as something innocuous and now all of a sudden had all this strange power in the school, you know, to get people fired or make you disappear or possibly have you killed. But the name of the club that struck fear into the heart of everyone was the Pudding Club. So could you have come – and they, no matter how dramatically they said it, well, I believe you've come up on the wrong side of the Pudding Club. Fear the wrath of the Pudding Club. Fuck you. Fuck you. Pudding.
I wonder what kind of pudding was the
club. Everything over there is pudding.
Oh, that's right. So like pudding is like a casserole.
All desserts are pudding. And sometimes a sausage. It was very confusing. Okay, I have my answers. Wait a minute. Okay. Great. Okay, so, listeners, get on the emails. crew@screamqueens.com, and that's queens with a Z. Or pick up the phone and dial 917-720-2047 and leave me your answers and tell me why and make them good. And if there is a match and I cannot decide, it will be decided by Rafflecopter. Rafflecopter. But when you just can't make a decision... Okay, so, boys, we're going to take a little break. We're going to listen to the trailer for Flowers in the Attic from 1987, and we are going to have some fun with captive children.
The secret.
Remember, God sees everything.
The sin. The children.
And you. gone. Evil from the moment of conception.
Flowers in the Attic. Based on the international best-selling novel that has generated three sequels and shocked 40 million readers worldwide. Flowers in the Attic comes at last to the screen. Now, the excursion into darkness begins.
You are a sinner.
Flowers in the Attic, the gothic tale of love and revenge.
Mother!
Starring Victoria Tennant and Academy Award winner Louise Fletcher. Flowers in the Attic, from New World Pictures.
Okay,
the
so
the trailer is much better than the movie.
It's much shorter than the movie. Am I bitter? Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. So, Flowers in the Attic, based on the infamous V.C. Andrews novel. This is the version from 1987. We are not talking about the Lifetime version because there's only so much of this story that I can take. Now, Ben wrote and begged and pleaded and cried and said, please, Patrick, please, I simply must come on this show. Ben, what is the obsession with this movie for you?
Well, I'm really obsessed with you, Patrick. I thought that the Flowers in the Attic would be a good gimmick that would allow me to weasel my way in, like Eve Harrington talking about her dead boyfriend in San Francisco.
Did you just call, so I'm Margot Channing in this situation?
Yes, and I want to be your assistant.
Oh, so I'm getting too old, Betty Davis? Is that what you're trying to say?
She's gorgeous.
Okay. Uh-huh. And you know what? I do have cold cream all over my face right now, so it's a completely perfect analogy.
I am obsessed with this movie, though, because when I was very little, it came out on video, and I saw the commercial on WPIX, which I'm sure you're intimately acquainted with.
Oh, sure. Channel 11. And
Channel 11 at the movie New York's movie station, and I asked my mom to rent it for me, and she did. And I was watching horror movies and whatever inappropriate things at that time, but this movie traumatized me. The idea that like a grandmother could like beat the shit out of her grandkids was literally beyond the realm of possibility for me. Like I knew like parents beat their kids, whatever. And I see TV movies. That wasn't, you know, that was nothing. But a grandmother, I was like, what is this? This is crazy. And I like freaked out. And I couldn't even go to the video store's drama section because I was afraid of seeing Louise Fletcher's like scary ass face. And whatever you say about how shitty this movie is, and it is kind of shitty, her face is scary. Like the makeup people and like whatever she was doing with her bone structure, like that was working. So I didn't see it for years after that, but like I read the book a million times and I developed this weird kind of obsession. Like when you're like afraid to, like you avoid a trauma, but you keep like going back to it at the same time. And then finally, when I was like 12 or 13, I saw it again, and I loved it. I just love how bad it is. But I mean, I actually think that it's fairly well directed and well photographed, which I and beautifully scored, which nobody ever talks about because the script is so bad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I love the script too. I love Louise Fletcher's crazy monologues, and I could do all of them, but I'm not going to. So that's the obsession. It's like my constant desire to explore this childhood trauma.
How could you give me a gift like that and then take it away, Ben?
What did I miss? What did I say? I don't even know.
Oh, he said, well, I could do all of her monologues, but I'm not going to.
Oh. Well, if you insist, maybe I will.
Just dangle that chocolate truffle right in front of my face and then eat it yourself. I see how you are. And all the truth comes out now. Okay, Brian.
I was just going to ask, how much does it deviate from the book? Because, Ben, you've read the book a bunch of times. Is it basically the same? Is it very different?
Oh, no, the fans, the V.C. Andrews fans are rageful because in the book, Chris and Kathy, the teenagers, they like flat out have sex like a lot of times.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, the thing is in the book, because I read the book a million times, too. I guess it's a gay thing. But you know what's weird? You know what's weird? I read it when I was in like the fourth grade. And then by the time when I was in high school, it was all over the young adult section. So it'd be like Judy Blume. You know, the Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, Flowers in the Attic. I'm like, these things don't go together. This is a fuck. The thing is, what struck me with the big difference between the movie and the book is that the book, they're there for years. They grow up in that attic. This movie seemed to just be maybe a couple of months.
I had a really hard time. Is it like, I was guessing a year, 2 years, maybe. I was trying to guess based on like their haircuts and stuff, but there's some continuity issues with the hair.
Yeah.
That made it kind of hard to tell. But it had to be at least 6 months, a year, maybe.
I imagine that it was a year.
I'm going to guess it's a year because it was sunny and not green out when they got there, and it was sunny and green again when they left.
Totally, yes.
And there's a moment where they make a big deal out of it turning winter.
Yes.
Right.
Because we have to put the flowers away.
So sad.
The paper flowers, not the real flowers. Those flowers are already put away.
They've been brought to God. God has taken them.
So if there's for some reason somebody out there who does not know the story, Brian, would you do the honor of giving like a 30-second description of the plot?
30-second plot. Basic plot. There is a family of four kids and a mom, and when the father dies, they all go live with the grandma and the ailing grandpa because the mom has hatched the plan that if she can get them to write her back into the will, they will all be rich beyond their wildest dreams. However, grandpa can't know that the kids are there, so they all have to be hidden in the attic.
Okay. Why can't Grandpa know about the kids?
Grandpa can't know about the kids because Mom has had a secret affair, or she ran off and got married to her uncle and had kids who Grandma thinks are an abomination, and Grandpa can't know about them.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. That was very well done. Good job. Good job, Brian.
Thank you very much.
You're doing very well. Brian was nervous before he came on. It was cute. It was cute. We don't bite here. Yeah, I have not seen this in a long time. I think I rented it when it came out on VHS and was just not impressed. The thing is, with the book and the movie, it's like nothing. It's not really a horror story. Nothing happens. I mean, yeah, these kids being imprisoned is a horrible thing, but the book is really more about the tedium that happens, and that is what leads to the incest, because their bodies are changing and there's no other outlet and they don't know what they're doing and they don't even know what they did was wrong.
I have a hard time guessing how old they are in the movie because they could pass for early 20s.
Yeah, they're like 30.
They're not hitting puberty. Like, puberty is long past these two in the movie.
Yeah, and I did not remember the twins being as young as they were, and I said, that's probably also why they shortened this thing, because otherwise they'd have to cast other kids.
Oh, that's such a good point.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point.
Grow, what's the matter with you?
And I didn't read the book, but they keep alluding to there being some sexual tension between the brother and the sister, but they never go there.
That was the thing that was killing me. This movie is dripping in incest. Not just between them. I mean, there was a scene early on where they're changing in front of each other. I'm like, oh, foreshadowing to incest. And then I remember, that's right, it doesn't happen in this. And there's tons of it.
Well, also Kathy and her father in the first scene. That was very sexual to me.
Oh, yeah, because he had Mom looking in the room like, he's paying too much attention to her. Why doesn't he pay attention to me like that? So right from the beginning, that family's creepy.
Yes. It just runs in the blood.
And what was funny, because the father, it's not funny that the father is killed in a car accident on his birthday, but the kids and the family, they're all getting hilarious. It's not funny. It's hilarious. But no, the kids are getting, the family's getting ready to throw him a surprise birthday party, and the twins come in and run in and say in unison, "We want to taste daddy's cake." And I was like, yep, incest. It's right there. It's right there. Coming right off that scene with the creepy jukebox. What am I thinking of? Music box. And it was weird. The whole thing's weird.
You know, that, back up a moment. Like, the moment we meet the father and he comes into the daughter's bedroom. And she's laying there and I guess it's after that. He comes in and he's giving her this music box. And I wrote down the line. He says something like, "The moment I saw that box, I knew you had to have it."
Totally.
And I'm thinking, he's thinking, the moment I saw your box, I knew I had to.
Because he didn't say music box. He said box.
And she's smiling at him, and he's caressing her. And this is, what, 5 minutes into the film?
Not even. It's like a minute into the movie.
It's the first It's the first scene.
Also, when is this happening?
Like, what year?
Yeah, because in the book, it's
the 50s.
It's the 50s. But and this is clearly not the 50s. It's clearly like 1987, except we have an off-screen narration from an adult version of Kathy. So I'm like, what, she's a visitor from the future? What is happening?
Yeah, I always assumed that she was speaking to us from the future, because Victoria Tennant's outfits are definitely from the 80s.
It was kind of confusing for a while. They were generic enough. All of them were generic enough for a while. But then once she moved into the house, I'm like, oh, no. This is all from not even the Dynasty collection. It's from like the Falcon Crest.
It's very Falcon Crest.
Or like one of the lesser. It's from the Flamingo Road collection. Some ripoff of Dynasty.
When they're in the car, do you get to see the car? Because I feel like that would be a good clue as to what year the movie takes place. Because most of it takes place in the school.
They're on the bus. Yeah, they're on. I thought they were on a bus. See, we weren't even clear about how the mode of travel is.
But Corinne's boyfriend drives up later, and it's an 80s car.
Okay.
Okay.
This is how well I know this movie. I'm like, wait, there is a car. I could imagine that.
Well, he's got a freaking – he's got like primo 80s soap opera mullet.
Yes.
The boyfriend. Amazing. So we're way ahead of herself. When they're on that bus or train or car or whatever it is, and she's complaining about having to leave home, I was going, why are you yelling? And it became evident.
I read a review of it a million years ago that said that's like her Oscar clip speech. Like this is what they're going to play when I'm nominated for my Oscar.
It is. I mean, why are you yelling? You're on public transportation and you're yelling. But then I realized as the movie went on, all of her dialogue is yells.
That's what Christy Swanson knows how to do. I've read so many mean jokes about her playing a robot in Deadly Friend, and how like that was the only role that she was well cast in. But I don't know. She's
that is
young.
A lie. That is a lie.
They talk about why the father dies?
It's a car accident.
He dies in a car accident. Okay.
I know that from the book. I don't think they said it in the.
It's not in the movie, but
I missed it in the movie, and no spoilers for later on. But because people, you know, there's good guys and bad guys in this movie. I didn't know, like, maybe the mom was in on it from the beginning. I don't know. And they established that he is the uncle, but they don't say who he's the brother to. Like, is he grandma's brother, or is there another sibling? Like, how?
That's a really good question, because her parents are a million years old.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it was from the other side of the family.
And he's 36.
In the book, he was the father's brother.
Okay.
He's grandpa's brother?
Yeah, there might have been some more complex situation, how that came to be, but I think so.
Yeah, because you're right, because he's ancient. He's like 112 years old. So
yeah, and we know they make a big point to establish the age of the father, because like the first set up there, she comes in and she's all Kathy's all stressed out because she can't figure out how to line up 36 candles on a cake.
Oh my god!
They established very early on that she's a troubled character, because her entire conversation is, I don't know how to put 36 candles on a cake and how to line them up.
And she's like really agitated about it.
That's because
like,
she's a girl, and math is hard for girls. Don't you remember that Barbie? She taught us that math is hard.
That must be it. That must be it.
And the brother totally gives her patriarchal bullshit about that.
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely, like, he totally mansplained that cake to her.
Something that I noticed in that whole like twins talking about eating daddy's cake and all the running
taste
around,
it. Tasting daddy's cake,
tasting. Is that? And I've seen this movie a million times, but watching it now, I was like, Victoria Tennant hates these children. Like, she did before they moved to Virginia.
Yeah.
Like, this woman doesn't have a matricity. This is like what happened to like Mary Tyler Moore in Ordinary People if she had four children instead of just two.
Do people talk about how terrible the actors are for like the kids? Yeah. Like, I didn't think the girl was as bad, but Corey, I think his name is maybe the worst actor. Granted, he's what, six?
But, if that, those were teeny kids.
Yeah, I wasn't even convinced that he wanted to eat cake when he said something like, you know, I want to eat the cake.
For me, though, it kind of adds a level of effectiveness because I feel so bad for just kind of acting like that I get sad when he suffers in the movie. But I guess that was the intention of the filmmakers.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, that's why you don't work with kids. They have no talent except your 4.5-year-old intern. She's a fucking genius. She'd be like, get out of the way. Get out of the way. Give me that rat. Where's Fred? I'm not sharing a screen with a rat. Are you crazy? All the cookies are mine.
Yeah, she'd be dead immediately. She'd all the cookies and be gone.
And Ellen Burstyn, Academy Award winning actress. And I'm going to guess it's the direction. I mean, the acting is so flat all the way through. It has to be the direction because she has no levels.
You mean Louise Fletcher?
I'm sorry. I confuse the two of them all the time. Eileen Brennan as the grandmother was terrible. Louise Fletcher. Sorry.
Beautiful.
I'm sorry. You are correct. I mean, the most interesting thing about her was that she was this prim religious woman who still wore an incredible amount of blue eyeshadow and wore red lipstick.
That to me is the most offensive change from the book, not the lack of incest. Because in the book, she just wears like a gray dress and like has gray hair pulled back all the time. But she's like totally like obsessed with her jewelry. And like she's kind of slutting it up in this movie.
Yeah, but we have no story about her. She's got one dimension. That's it.
She's just evil.
Yeah.
But her face is kind of scary. Like, am I wrong on that?
No, I'm just saying she's scary, but there's nothing else there. I kind of like to know what's driving her.
Jesus.
Yeah. Or what is she like outside of that room? I mean, granted, maybe that wasn't in the book, but, you know, as an actress, thinks she would, whatever.
The actress actually wrote a prequel to Flowers in the Attic called Garden of Shadows, which was all about the grandmother's rise from
Did she really write it? Did she really write it, or was it the person who kept writing for, like, 20 years after the woman died?
My understanding
is DC Andrews has been dead since, like, 1932, yet still has a book out every year. She's like the Tupac of trashy literature.
True. The rumor on the street is that she had written part of it, and Andrew Niederman, who also wrote Pin, which is another great movie, finished it. But who knows if that's true?
Okay. Yeah, because there's a lot of books to the series, but this one kind of said, we're not making a sequel. With the way these ended. But we're not there yet. We're ahead of ourselves. Okay. Sexy foreshadowing. Yes. She was in that bathtub a lot.
Yes.
Clearly it was supposed to be symbolic of something because there was a point where she's not taking a bath but was in the bathtub anyway.
Oh, that's a really good point. That's her safety zone, right? That's where
I guess. So this is my womb.
Yeah.
Not my womb, but the womb. Forget it.
It's a womb.
Well, she wants to be surrounded by her sexuality because, like, she's not allowed to have or something.
Yeah, she takes lots of baths and she's never alone. She's never alone in the bathtub.
Yeah, every time she gets in there, Chris is like knocking at the door,
uncomfortably washing her back.
Yeah, that was odd, right? He comes in and she just hands him the washcloth, like, you know what to do.
Get busy. Yeah, that's the thing.
I really
wonder why
they didn't just have the incest when, like, every other shot was like her caressing her legs while he washed. I guess they must have wanted it to be rated PG-13,
or it got cut.
Yeah,
in previews.
There was a lot of was cut from this movie. They totally reshot the ending, and the director walked off the set.
The ending smacks of reshot, but we're not there yet either. What? See, I don't even know really what to talk about because I was just really bored. But I remember this. I remember this quote, and I don't remember who said it. Ben, I have to pass this to you. Remember how he mowed the lawn?
I think that must have been. It must have been Kathy.
I must have been, but it was just such a – I don't remember. It was a line that was so terrible I wrote it down. Now I don't remember the context.
Who? Yeah, I don't remember the context of it either.
Speaking of mowing the lawn, they have a lot of shots of this, you know, giant grand front lawn of this thing, right, of the house, this old decrepit manor, which is – and the lawn must be, what, 200 yards across? And as far as I can tell, there are three people who work at this mansion, not including Grandma.
Yep.
And, you know, the groundskeeper, you know, old Gristle Joe –
yep.
He. I'm guessing he mows this entire thing probably with one of those old school pushing rotary
blade
things. And the lawn's immaculate, right? Uh-huh. It looks beautiful.
I know. There's a butler. There are no maids. I don't know who's cleaning this monstrosity of a house.
There's a woman washing the window, and it's VC Andrews.
Oh, you're right.
In one shot, there's an old woman, and we never see her again.
That was VC Andrews?
Well, it's VC Andrews.
Wow. Well, I guess that's the problem when you're an author and do a cameo. Nobody knows who the fuck you are. You're not Stephen King. Sorry. My favorite thing about Chris, he had three moments of slow-mo nose. No! That's why he got cast. He was really good at those.
Those were his Oscar scenes. I remember they showed one of those on the commercial, and that's one of the things that attracted me to the movie. I loved slow-mo.
Really? You go for that sort of thing?
Totally. Can we talk about how their living quarters, even though we're supposed to be shocked and terrified at how oppressed they are like kind of would be a fabulous New York townhouse?
Yeah, yeah. In the book, it was a rickety room. It was like a spare room that had been fitted up.
Not anymore.
No. This was. I thought. I'm like, oh, they're gonna get taken to another room. No, they're not. This is the room.
I mean, I get it. The decor left something to be.